Hello, welcome to the self-learning platform by Dr. Sushma Singh. Today we start Unit 9, Edmund Burke. And our topic is citizenship and democracy. Burke was also perturbed by the democratic aspirations of the French Revolution, in particular by the doctrine of popular sovereignty and general will. He regarded democracy as the most shameless thing in the world. He was skeptical of the political ability of the ordinary people. He was an elitist, totally unconcerned about the plight of the masses. For him, the best form of political practice was one that was played by a few of the enlightened and aristocratic elite. Burke believed that elections gave an opportunity for the enfranchised citizens to choose a wise elite to govern them. In a modified form, scrumptious provided a similar model of elitistic theory of democracy in the 1940s. Like Aristotle, Burke favored the citizenship limited to a segment of adults who had the leisure for discussion and information and were not mentally dependent. The Whigs in England and America favored ownership of the property as a necessary condition for citizenship. In view of the fact that average individuals were guided by their baser instinct, government had to keep them apathetic so as to prevent their selfishness from undermining communal life. Burke accepted inequalities as natural and unavoidable to any society, and that some would enjoy an enhanced status. In the well-ordered society, this ruling elite was a genuine one, a natural aristocracy, for the mass of the people were incapable of governing themselves. They could not think or act without guidance and direction. For Burke, government was not based on general will, but wisdom. For Burke, political representation is the representation of interest, and interest has an objective, impersonal, and unattached reality. For Burke, aristocracy of virtue and wisdom should govern for the good of a nation, as in order other area, even in representation, there was no clear and well laid out theory of representation. But out of Burke's speeches and writings emerged some key ideas. He regarded the members of parliament as an elite group, a group of natural aristocracy. The mass of ordinary people needed the guidance and direction from this elite, since they could not govern by themselves. Representatives were generally superior to the electorate. The representatives had to possess the capacity for rational decision making. They were to be men of practical wisdom. This was a negation of Jean-Jacques Rousseau's theory of direct democracy. The representatives need not consult or be bound by the views of the voters. Furthermore, obligation and ethical considerations and questions of right and wrong guided governmental action. Burke championed rational parliamentary discussion, which provided the right answers to political questions. And as a participant, the representative need not consult the voters. They would enjoy complete freedom, for they have no interest other than the national interest. With contempt for the average voter, Burke advocated restricted suffrage so that the selection process of the natural aristocratic group of parliament would become foolproof. He also distinguished between actual representation and virtual representation. Since an area would have one dominant interest, he saw the merit of virtual representation against actual representation. Virtual representation was based on common interest. By this logic, even people who did not vote were represented. The localities which did not have actual representation by this criteria would have virtual representation. Burke was careful in noting that this logic of virtual representation did not hold for the disenfranchised. Catholics of Ireland and the people of the American colonies. Pitkin rightly pointed out that the Burke's position was highly inconsistent. His view of representation endorsed the 17th century notion of representation and had very little relevance in the contemporary time. However, it helps us to understand the anti-democratic bias prevalent during Burke's period. The Burkean theory centered on the parliament. Conniff tried to refute Pitkin's analysis by questioning the theory of objective interest and a commonly held argument of the parliamentary elite on what constituted the common good. However, Burke's insistence that every recognizable constituency had one dominant interest and that a consensus could always emerge out of parliamentary discussion vindicated Pitkin. The next point is religion and tolerance. Burke's views on religion exhibited both liberal and conservative perceptions. He defended the traditional practices of established church unless there was an intolerable abuse. He equated attack on the established Church of England as tantamount to an attack on England's constitutional order. He was convinced that the established church would foster peace and dissuade civil discord. His liberal temperament made him advocate and defend toleration for most religious sects, including non-Christians. He was perturbed that the Protestants did not support toleration for the Catholics. He did not believe in the truth of any particular religion, but was concerned about the effect of changes in traditional religious practices on political stability. Toleration and religious freedom could be refused if it threatened civil peace and considered atheism as complementary to political radicalism. He was condescending towards rational dissenters as being better than atheists, for at least they believe in God, though not in divinity of Christ. However, he castigated all those who corrupted and attacked religion as being destructive of all authority, thereby undermining equality, justice, and order, the foundations of human society. Burke did not quarrel with atheists as long as they did nothing to publicly attack or subvert religion. While he began to dislike Hume for his open contempt of religion, he remained friendly with the irreligious Smith, even though the latter blamed Roman Catholicism for impeding economic and political progress. But there was no denunciation or revolt against the religion. Burke's critique of French Revolution was also due to the latter's anti-clericism. The famous cry, "Hang the bishops from the lamppost," during the early days of the revolution was an indication of the insolent irreligious in opinions and practice. The nationalization of the church property by the National Assembly in 1790 was a move against traditional religion and represented the larger goal of subverting, establishing authority and civil society. The revolutionary fervor only fostered hatred, animosity, and suspicion rather than affection and trust. It undermined the traditional civilizing ties of the French citizens. Burke placed a great deal of emphasis on manners and etiquette that controlled passions and will. Now we want to wind up this lecture and thank you so much for your attention.